Hey, baby.
Hey.
Naomi and Andy here with a quick Q/request.
Yes. So, okay, Acast is doing these audience surveys, okay? We put the link in the show notes. The link is going to be in the link tree on our Instagram and everything like that. Here's the thing, Naomi. You know, we're already pretty choosy about the ads that we allow on the show. No weapons manufacturers.
Raytheon, get out of here.
Yeah. Screw off, Raytheon. But we want to make sure that the ads are kind of tailored to y'all.
Right.
Okay? Right? Say you want to hear ads for A Different World DVD box sets.
We need to know that.
We need
can
to
go
know
out
that.
To them. We can get the word out. But we only can get the word out if you give us the word. So you got to fill out the survey. It is quick, quick, quick. And it just lets us know if the ads you're hearing are the right ads for you.
Yeah.
So get on over to the show notes where that link is or the Couples Therapy link tree and fill out that quick survey so we can pass the word on to Acast.
All right. Roll it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Open your hearts, loosen your butts. It's time for Couples Therapy!
Yeah, this podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, text, sex, regrets, or feeling on your new Jubu. They gon' talk about it, ah, yeah, you are invited, ah, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
It's Couples Therapy, Couples Therapy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Couples Therapy. My name is Naomi.
My name is Andy.
And we are a real-life couple.
Real-life couple of comedians.
And on Couples Therapy, we answer a couple of questions from a couple of different listeners.
Whew.
Well, well, well.
What a weekend.
Well, it was somebody's birthday.
It was my birthday. But I think the real star of the weekend was Mabel, who met so many dogs.
Mabel, I mean, Saturday was for old friends. Mm-hmm. You know, she saw her classic Edie and Peanut, Golden Girls, Cooper and Fitz. But then Sunday, she met Franny, a.k.a. her doppelganger, even though their haircuts weren't matching today. So I could tell them apart. And then a beautiful dog named Midas. Who did truly have a touch.
You, of course, opened for Jeff Tweedy from Wilco at Largo.
Yes.
A lot of things ending in O.
Wilco, Largo, opening. Sorry. But did you enjoy it? Because I felt the need to, you know, make sure people knew I would never do a show on your birthday.
Uh-huh.
You know, because it's like we would do dinner, we would do something. But you were like, you know, you're a fan of Jeff Tweedy, and so me doing the show gave us a chance to see the show from the friggin' wings for Coolio. Like, cool people, I mean, when I say for Coolio.
Yeah, I haven't seen Wilco since the Yankee Hotel Foxtrot tour. So that was
That like it was just something.
That was
you know,
a long time
know.
Ago.
Okay, a long time.
A long time ago.
A long time.
So it was a thrill. He was very nice.
He was so nice.
Very nice person.
Well, it's funny because, you know, you and I, as we go out and about in L.A., we do start to run into people who we've admired, seen from afar. And normally often, uh-huh. you'll get a little nervous and a little quiet.
Yeah.
And I thought you were just fun and casual with Jeff Tweedy.
I was. We talked about Dave Berman from the Silver Juice.
You did.
It was great.
What was it about him? Is it musicians versus comedians? Like you're a little bit more comfortable around them?
I don't know what I think. I've just like I hit a point, Naomi, where I was like, you're an adult. Just fucking get your shit together and just talk to people. Stop being so like, yeah, I don't know. I think it was just
no, I was just
I hit
curious.
A wall.
Well, I mean, look, the pandemic definitely took down my boundaries and like sense of like, oh God, it's like, wait, we've all been through a collective trauma. Mm-hmm. Well, then we all on the same page.
Yeah.
So this whole like, you're somebody, you know, on a higher level. It's like,
yeah. And like accomplishing some stuff that I've wanted to accomplish, I think gives me a little bit of confidence in my back pocket.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
But what an indie rock family we have here. You opened for Jeff Tweedy. My old band opened for Death Cab for Cutie.
My God. Look at us. Look, whoever thought. Certainly when we got together, I didn't think I'd be opening for a Jeff Tweedy.
Yeah.
I didn't know who a Jeff Tweedy was.
Who's next? What indie rock?
Superchunk.
Superchunk?
I'll open for Superchunk. I can't think of an audience who would be less amenable.
Mac McConaughey, you listening? when you guys are in, when you guys come here to Los Angeles, have Naomi open up for you.
I can think of nothing more terrible. But Andrew, I would do it for you. I would do it so that you could hang out backstage with Superchunk. And we could get a picture.
What time? So like when I was a teenager, right? After a show, sometimes the band would come out and you would get like, they would sign stuff you would say like, you know, hey, that was great shit, whatever.
The 90s when there was hope.
Yeah.
And people were nice. Yeah.
There was one time I saw Superchunk in Philly. And for whatever reason, no one did that but me and my one friend.
Oh, like no one stayed outside.
Yeah. And I was just standing there and I'm like, should we go?
Yeah.
And I said that to my friend and he's like, yeah, maybe. And then the band came out and it looked like we were about to like knife them and steal their equipment.
Oh God.
And I just was just like, that was a great show, guys. Bye. And then I like ran because it was so embarrassing.
Yeah.
Because it would feel weird. Because it was a dark alley. It was
my God, yes.
Like the Trocadero or something.
Oh, well, that's why no one else was doing it.
I can't remember.
Maybe that's why no one else was doing it, because it was a dark alley.
It's a dark alley. We were holding billy clubs. My friend Dan had a sock filled with D batteries. I don't know why it was threatening.
Someone was nodding out behind a dumpster. Why was no one else waiting to meet the band?
Now, before we get into today's episode, I just want to very quickly.
Yes, please.
You know, Alyssa's episode last week. Yes. So many people called in with advice for the woman who called in because her parents, like her dad got very Trumpy over the last couple years.
Was and like, he was like harsh belittling with his mom. Yeah. With her mom. Yeah.
Belittling her mom. And it was just a real shit show. And she didn't know like what to do.
Right.
We got so many responses that were saying things like protect yourself.
Uh-huh.
Don't get involved.
Hmm.
You can't. They're adults too. You can't.
Right. Like, right.
There's nothing you can really do. One caller said you got to let them hit rock bottom. I did. And things like got better after that. They got divorced or they got separated or whatever like that.
Wow.
And then I think they said, you know, the caller can reach out to me if she wants. We can't really connect people, but
right.
And if anyone wants to start a Discord and be the moderator, feel free. But here's one that I thought was something none of us thought of. So let me play this comment.
Please.
Hi, Andy and Naomi. My name is Sarah. I'm hiding in a bedroom on vacation to come at you right quick, because I wanted to share my experience from Alyssa Mastromonaco's episode. Sounds just like my parents, the caller that is having a problem with her parents. Exactly like my parents. I come from a Latin family, so, you know, we got a lot of machismo and shit like that. And so that's been an issue. My parents are on the same age. My mom just turned 70. My dad is 65, a little bit younger than my mama. And, you know, he's been having a real hard time since he retired 2 years ago. And so my siblings and I definitely all had separate conversations with him about his behavior. And, you know, it really took my brother, the youngest of us all, to get through to him. And myself coming from a place of love and being like, hey, yo, Dad, I'm coming to you because I absolutely love you and I want you to know that this is not okay. And here's my experience, because I see myself fully in him. And it took me 2 years to get him on Lexapro. Okay. See if this caller can help her dad take care of his mental health first to better the relationship. Because ever since my dad got on Lexapro, their relationship has been so much better. My mom has her grandchildren as an excuse to get away from him. And so just wanted to leave you with that. Work on your mental health first. The panorama's been a bitch on everybody. So see if that helps. I loved your episode with Alyssa. We just started talking about infused vodka. I thought she was talking about like infusing with weed. I had this infused rum once that fucked up my whole afternoon. So Alyssa, if you hear this, try that sometime. I love you both deeply. Esteemed guests, what's popping? Bye.
Okay, I'm obsessed. To know that this person is listening to our podcast makes me feel so good. Makes me feel like, okay, I am finding my tribe. Mm. These are the people. Mm. Yes, beautiful angel. Thank you so much. Whew, 2 years to get your daddy on Lexapro. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That one, you persevered and that he got there. And I can only imagine. It's so true because sometimes I think I definitely forget about that when it comes to the older generation, right? Yeah. Because they didn't grow up with medication and like open conversation about it the way we have. And then it's like, oh, right. Like just because you're 70 don't mean you don't need a Wellbutrin. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, that's also an option too. There can be so much stigma, but my God, it can be helpful. It really can.
Now, when the caller said got their dad on Lexapro, does that mean like got him to go to a psychiatrist and get a prescription or just start sneaking it into his food? Like the way we feed Prem his thyroid medication.
Yeah, so it's maybe they did just mash it up, mash some Lexapro up with some wet food, with an arroz con pollo,
hide it under some plantain crunchies.
Crunchies. A nice ripe one, so it's soft, and then you put the pill in it. No, I bet that is a beautiful thing, though. But yeah, it takes a lot. It's a lot. Good Lord. That sounds real. There's a lot of people who need a little something. Little 5-10 milligrams or something to just like put a little space between them and the first thought.
But I like that because all of us were like, fuck this guy. Like everyone, even the people that are calling like, hey, don't get involved or like, you know, let them hit rock bottom. Almost everyone is universally like, this guy's a piece of shit. But it took one caller to call in with empathy towards the dad and be like, maybe he's not doing well. And maybe.
Yeah. But also they are acknowledging it still wasn't easy, right?
It took multiple children.
To finally break through, and it's like...
So it was basically like a mental health intervention, kind of.
Absolutely. I mean, because I doubt it was too, like, being like, hey, Dad, you need Lexapro. It's like, are you a doctor? It's more like, could you go talk to someone and maybe see? You know, and those are the levels of it. Those are the layers of it.
By the way, speaking of dads who do have their shit together, Naomi.
Oh, baby.
Who's our guest today?
Our guest is the hysterical, kind, wonderful, truly wonderful.
Truly.
Rory Scovel, honey. Rory is a writer. He's an actor. He's a stand-up. He's a podcaster. Maybe you've seen him on the show Physical on Apple TV Plus, or maybe you've seen his show Robbie on Comedy Central, maybe you've heard his podcast Pen Pals with Daniel Van Kirk.
Former guest.
Truly friends. And if you like advice and people writing in, definitely Pen Pals Pod would do that for you.
You were on an episode.
I was indeed. And he's simply amazing. So yeah. I think it's really time to just kick back, live our life, have whatever that rum drink was the caller mentioned, and listen to Rory.
Roll it.
Can I ask you a question? On a scale of 1 to 10, what level of nervous are you when you have to watch someone sing the national anthem at like a sporting event or whatever occasion? Because I feel like it's such an easy song to get wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then people yell at you like you hate the country. Even though you've offered your beautiful vocal cords.
It's a hard one, though. It's a hard one. And I will say the problem is when you get it wrong, whether you are just playing for like a little league in Peoria or it's like the World Series, you will go viral. Like someone has recorded it. They're going to put you out there and be like, look at this dumb bitch.
Yeah.
No matter what. And that's what sucks about
it. Yeah. And that's your life. And then that becomes your entire identity.
How many videos right now do you think on YouTube are titled, look at that dumb bitch?
Billions and billions. I mean, have you guys ever heard the Glenn Close national anthem? And she like cannot hit that last note, honey, and it hurts.
Because
it's like,
no.
Glenn, honey, you can do so much.
Did they call her Glenn Close enough?
Does she even have a voice? Yeah.
Not really. Like, it was just very like, fine. And you can kind of like, sometimes in some parts, talk it.
Yeah.
It really, it got caught. It got caught in a way that was really sad. But you know what? Yeah. Glenn can take it. She can take it.
She can take it.
That's what I think of when I think of Glenn Close. I don't think of any of her movies. I think of that vocal crack.
Yeah.
The national anthem.
When I see someone with an unimpressive voice sing the national anthem, and I'm just like, well, you can't really make fun of them. Like, what would I bring to the table?
Well, it makes me want to enlist. When I hear Whitney Houston's Star Spangled Banner, I'm like, I will enlist. I will fight for God and country.
Yeah.
Because she's so good. But that's not what this is about, okay? This show is not about...
No. This exactly. We have totally turned the tide on our political alignment. We are here to recruit people into the U.S. military. Rory, that's what
times
brought
are
you
different.
Here today.
Times are different.
Mm-hmm. You were saying, though, before we started about how you've gotten into painting now. And like, yes. You go in the garage, you take your time, and you just... get into some painting.
Yeah.
I'm very curious as to what is your medium of choice and what's your subject matter of choice?
Love that. I am abstract. I love mm-hmm. doing the abstract mm-hmm. because I don't know that I can do anything else. You know what I mean? And I think there's a lot of people that could be good at painting or really enjoy it, but because they sit down to go, oh, I'm going to paint a person or a landscape... and because they can't actually do that, they think they can't do art because mm-hmm. they don't just try with something abstract, even though abstract is very difficult as well. But because it's abstract, you might actually walk away liking it, knowing that I just smeared some stuff here and there and then I did this and I kind of like how it looks. So I'm doing abstract stuff because I for that very reason. But I'm trying to learn it. I'm trying to learn from the mistakes, and I use acrylic.
Yes,
I just discovered. I put tape down. I try to get really clean lines.
Clean lines, uh-huh.
With the tape, but I got to say, on a wood canvas,
mm-hmm. matted, pre-stretched, or are you stretching it yourself?
Well, no, just actual wood. No,
oh,
no.
Oh, you're just putting
canvas.
It straight up in the wood. Okay.
Yeah, just wood, and then matted acrylic mm-hmm, with the mm-hmm. tape, and oh my god, it is so satisfying. It's so much fun.
Do you have any kind of artistic background?
So I did. I don't think so. I did enjoy art. You know, the way we all took art in school, and you know, you're a kid and you're in art class, and then at some point, like in high school or just after or somewhere in there, it just starts to get labeled as like, well, that's what kids do, and now it's time for you to go and do what adults do and take classes that, you know, are geared towards whatever job you
add up numbers
get.
And cry.
Turning you,
exactly.
Like you into a drone.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's kind of sad because I actually think every single person is an artist and capable of actually making good personal art. I think they are capable of it, but we sort of live in a society that pushes away from it. So I fell into that. I was like, oh, I'm kind of good at art, but then I play sports and I don't know, I don't really want to sit and learn art and I'm bored with it and blah, blah, blah. And then for some reason, I just kind of got back into it. Painting, I think maybe with my daughter, kind of was this excuse to get to start over with art and like finger painting and all this stuff that's so therapeutic and fun to do and lets this thing out of you. And so I just started, I think, because of her, and now I'm full on just addicted. I'm every night I'm trying to go and paint and work on stuff.
I love it.
Is it just meditation, or are you actually like trying to become better?
I am. It's kind of both. I am trying to become better, but I also am trying to eliminate the thought process, eliminate the second guessing, eliminate the fear that maybe this is not the color or the shape or the line or the spot on the canvas. All of that is so hard to get over. But what I've learned through the painting is like, oh, that's also like life. You know, like when you have a blank canvas, you're sort of afraid to start because you think it's going to be the wrong choice. I mean, you know, the three of us, I'm sure, have so many friends in our lives who have told us, oh, I'm going to start stand up. I need to write a few things first. And you don't know how to tell them that that makes no sense at all because you just have to go up there and talk anyways. Whatever you're going to write is not going to, it won't matter. You just have to go talk. And I think painting is a little bit like that. It's like just starting and not thinking that whatever choice you've made is the painting. It's mm-hmm. It has so far to go before it's done. So I think it's meditative.
Now, I have a cue, you know, because you mentioned your daughter. And one of the things I like to do when we have a guest on this podcast who we like know-ish is I love to tell people what I think of them. And then they have to kind of like, you know, either correct me or justify, whatever.
Yes.
And so that's like how I kind of start conversations. A little combative maybe, but that's my style.
I like it.
And so you have a daughter, and I will say that has always surprised me about you. Yeah. Because on stage, you are a goofy, good time guy. And then and you also don't talk about.
Well,
really.
You are what we call on this show a bit boy. B-I-T-B-O-I.
Yep.
Non-gender specific. Anyone can be a bit boy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You love a bit. You're goofing. And like, you also don't really talk about, you know, your daughter, at least on stage. And so, so it's not like I had some, you don't talk about like, I'm a dad and isn't this wild and we do this. So then when you said it off stage and I'm just thinking to myself, what is happening? And then who is this person you're married to?
Yeah.
Who, you know, had your child. Also, I thought you were very young. When I first met you, I was convinced you were like 26.
Oh, I love that.
And I was like, okay, because you just had an energy to you. You have an energy to you that says, I've got the whole world in front of me. I got my whole life ahead of me.
That's called delusion. Still delusional.
So I thought for some reason, and then I was like, oh, well, then maybe he has a kid because he's really into Jesus, which is what I always assume when anyone has a child young is they're religious.
Okay. Anyone who's from the South? Who has a child
I'm
young?
From the South, yeah.
Yeah, but also the Midwest. Yeah. And also the coasts. If you have a kid young, I just assume it's because you believe that God has planned that for you.
God told you to. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not true.
Hold on. I think it splits off like this. If you're from the coast and you have a child young, it's because your family has money.
Okay.
If you're from the Midwest or the South and you have a child young, it's because of religion.
Interesting.
Yeah, because you kind of think that's what you're supposed to do. It is very much like, you know, in your early 20s to mid 20s, get married, start on the path of the job that will be the 30-year venture, get a house, have a kid. I think it's changing a little bit down in the South just because society alone and also, you know, people's financial situations is now so wildly different than what it once was when someone could actually settle down in their early 20s.
Right. You can't have a job for 30 years now. Absolutely not. You freelance until you're 57. And then hopefully you get some health care.
You can barely have a job
and
for
any
30
kids,
minutes.
Yeah, any kids in that time frame are just strictly accidental. There's no, we didn't plan that. Yeah. But it is, it's changing a little bit. But yeah, I have some jokes about the two of them. But I think they don't really exist in this very real space for me of like, hey, this is a thing that happened. So every now and then I have a story that kind of presents itself to me and I go, oh, that could be a thing. But I think that my awareness of like spotting jokes for some reason just lives in this intensely fictional space where maybe I take something that's real, but then I just completely change it. And knowing that the way that I like to perform it, you know, my expectation is that no one would ever believe it anyways, but I kind of like, how hard can I sell this thing that I think is so obviously fictional and try to sell it like people are like, oh yeah, no, I think that's a true story that he just told. But yeah, I love that you thought I was 26. That feels so good.
But is it sort of like you have two separate sides of you in that, like, it's like a different, when you're home, when you're in like family mode is different than you in obviously as actor, as comedian. And I know that sounds a little obvious, but like, for instance, I don't have that. Like how I am on stage is how I am at home, which is why Andrew is so tired. You know what I'm saying? I'm so sorry.
He's just asleep during this entire podcast. Wake him up.
Wait,
I heard my name. I heard my name. I think that's one of the things that I truly love and admire about watching you on stage is that knowing that what I'm getting is genuine and real. Not that when people, and we know plenty of comics who go on stage and they put on a thing and it's fine and good, and sometimes it's exaggerated. Sure, we all exaggerate sort of that personality. But when someone truly is not like that at all, I don't tend to, and it's not by choice, it's an instinct, I'm not attracted to what they're talking about or how they're talking about it. Whereas someone who I think is being honest about who they are, even if I hated their jokes, I'm more attracted to what they're doing naturally and organically because it just comes from like a place of who they are. That's what I love about your stuff is that you didn't just go, well, this is a good joke. You're like, no, this happened. And the emotion and the volume that I might go up and down with is because that's how I felt
and
feel about the thing. And so because of it, even though it didn't happen to me, I can listen and laugh and going, I am right there with her. Even though I don't know what she's talking about, I know exactly what she's talking about. And I almost feel like it happened to me.
But I would throw you in that category, too. Because you are a goof. You're just like, what I like about you is that you are a goof on stage. And you're a goof in real life, but you are not, I mean, from the couple times we've talked. So
Right, yeah.
But you're not like, you're not just constant bits. Like, you have an emotional core and you're not afraid to like talk like a normal human being. Versus, I think what the kind of stand-up that is really turns me off is the sociopath who puts on, who's like, they're dead inside in real life. There's just a void.
They
walk on stage, and as they're walking on stage, they're like zipping up their human suit.
Yeah.
And then they're like, hey!
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay.
And they're just like a rainbow of colors, and you're like, where was that?
Yep.
Literally right before your name was called.
Exactly. Yeah. You seem like someone forced you to be here, and then suddenly it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so wild.
Someone just dumped a Skittles rainstorm on top of your head, and you're just the happiest person. I think that for me, like I am like that at home. I try to be as absurd as I can be on stage, and the silliness and the voices I go into. It's all I am like that off stage as well. I just also. You know, there's also that ability to read the room with your family and friends and strangers also. So I try to be that way just for my daughter to see like, hey, be silly. Don't, you know, soon enough you're going to fall into that middle school, high school thing where it's like, hey, put the silly away and really care about what people think. And there's no way around it. We all go through it. But just if you have a concrete foundation of who you are before you get to middle school and before you go through that adolescence... You know, maybe when you get to 22, you can go, oh, yeah, I remember I used to be silly and get, you know,
I used to be happy.
I used to be happy and like let these emotions out and let the, you know, blurt out the dumbest thing and do stupid stuff and have fun. I think I try to say, hey, look, this is how I am. Mm-hmm. And I know it's in your DNA. So don't be afraid to let this out and don't get too wrapped up in what people, you know, think all the time.
Yeah.
The metaphorical, in my mind, as you were talking, I was imagining like this big hulking guy with a baseball bat walking around high schools. And anytime he saw anyone smiling, he like taps the baseball bat against his other hand and looks at them menacingly.
Yeah.
That's what, in my mind, that's what like those years are like before you can hopefully rediscover the joy of existing.
Yes. Yes. Yeah,
you're trying to fit in so bad and like not almost like you. It's so interesting because it's like you want people to like you while at the same time you do not want to be noticed at all.
Yes.
Right. Like you're like, I don't want to ruffle feathers. I don't want to make waves. I don't want anyone staring at me.
Yeah.
But I also would love it if you all loved me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I think there's some wiring in our brains because I'm like that after shows. Like, I don't really want to talk to people I don't know. I want to be in the green room with comics and I don't even. It doesn't even have to be like comics I know or like people I necessarily know. I just look at it like, well, we're all in the headquarters back here, so we can be who we are. Also, to me, it's like athletes that stretch and warm up before a game. That green room is what that is. I mean, it's like if the comics are all joking and having fun, you're like, oh, this is getting me geared up for going on stage. I think that's why it's fun to... You know, I used to be in that headspace of, I don't want to follow someone really good because then you have to find out you either can't keep the beach ball in the air or you have to find out you're not as good or you're not good. I used to look at it that way. You know, there's so much ego and jealousy involved in it. But now, like, going up after someone who's really good, it's like, if you really watch their set, it's so, like, inspired. Whatever they're doing, you go, oh, yeah, instead of just going, well, how's the audience reacting? It's like spotting the fun that they're having in that moment. And yeah. I think back to when we did Largo, and you guys were on stage, and when you were up there and just going at it. Like, I remember you went out, and you just pressed the accelerator. You just went.
Well, I was in a jumpsuit. Like... I was in a jumpsuit, and that says all bets are off. Yeah. So thank you for noticing.
But going out and just hitting that gas and going, I'm going to go, it's so great, because then you go, oh, yeah, do that. Don't go out and go, I hope they like me. Go out and go, I don't give a fuck about you. I'm here to talk. And anyone who doesn't laugh, it's because you don't get it.
Well, I think that's the death knell of all art, is going out there with, I hope they like me.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, whatever you're doing or anything. I think, like, walking into any situation, whether you are, like, doing stand-up or making a painting or,
yeah.
you know, walking into your office with, I hope they like me energy. I hope they like me.
Yeah. Well, it's, even for pitching stuff, energy. You go to pitch a show or a movie idea or script or whatever, and if you walk in there with, like, so if you guys are into this, it's like, well, then they already are like, no.
Yeah.
But if you go in there and you're like, you guys are idiots, and this is why I'm brilliant, they're like, oh, my God.
I ended a pitch recently, and as well, we have been pitching it a long time, like, many times, right? And I ended it, and I go, you're welcome. And I was just like so sick of them. I've been doing so much back-to-back people staring at me over Zoom. And finally, I was like, yes, you have a show here. You're welcome. And, you know, they still did not buy it. But I was true to me. And that's so it's beautiful.
Yeah. I've started with two things. One, I started calling this the only comedy podcast, this show.
Yeah, you have to.
It's not, obviously. But, like, I've started saying that. And then the other thing is... I started calling myself a world-class writer.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a good writer. I'm a very good writer. I'm not, but I'm just like, who's going to fucking debate? Like, who's
fact-checking?
Yeah, yeah, I think world-class is great because no one really knows what that lives in. They're like, world-class? I don't know what that even, all right.
Sounds right.
But he's not saying international. He's just world. He's just classy. He's classy globally.
Galactically renowned writer.
Galactic. Okay,
yeah,
that
like
has a little
that.
Ron Hubbard energy to it. I don't know about that. But okay, though you mentioned jealousy, you mentioned ego, you know, and that is just really quickly before we answer people's relationship questions, before we help them handle their scandal, you know, would you say, you know, you're an emotionally open person? Were you someone who would, like, have a lot of relationships and have crushes easily and be like, here is my heart? Or were you like... maybe you'll break down a wall. You know that kind
of vibe? I did not have a lot of relationships, but I crushes very easily. And it also exists in that world of, like, that I don't even think it's just a comedian's brain. I think we just figured out what to do with it. But that, like, I need attention and I want you to like me. A lot of people label that as like, that's why you're a comedian. It's like, there's a high percentage of people. We just figured out how to make money off of this sort of weakness and strength in a way. I was like that. I would say in all of those relationships, including my marriage now, I've been with my wife. We've been married since 2013, and we've been together since 2005.
Woo!
I feel like I am still in a beginner's course of how to fully open up emotionally.
Because
and sometimes I do it, and I get really proud of myself. But I won't lie; it is very difficult to do, and I couldn't say what that block in my brain is because my dad was not a. We're men. He wasn't like that. My dad was, you know, there was no machismo about him at all. And so I don't know what it is in my mind to have this block of not wanting to just openly share these emotions. But I will say I do work on it because I don't want that passed on to my daughter as an example. I want to be like, hey, whatever you're feeling, let it out because it doesn't go anywhere good. You can't store it away. It molds quickly. So get it out of your brain. But I work on it. I try to work on it.
Was there like a dividing line in your life like, for me, I was like a bit boy. I mean, I still am, but like, I was a bit boy solidly, never going to show any kind of emotion. And then, like, I moved to New York to start doing comedy. And I noticed that, like, that doesn't, even if you're doing like goofy stuff, being emotionally closed off does not help there. And I noticed that, like, just like my personal relationships weren't the best they could be. Like, especially like working with like a writing partner and stuff like that. And then Naomi's like, get into therapy. And I'm like, nah. And then, yeah. Then 2 years later, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, I've put it off a lot, the therapy thing. I've gone in and out of it. And it's funny, I go in and out of it knowing how beneficial and great it really is and how great I felt doing it. And then as soon as I hit a wall, I'm like, never mind, I got this. But I don't know if there was like a hard divide line. I think it's been a slow fade of learning the importance of all those things. I don't know if I'm on, you know, I guess it's personal to everybody. I don't know if I'm on schedule or behind schedule, but at 41, I feel like that I'm in this constant space of finally opening up myself to where I look at someone's situation, I'm like, well, why am I so angry? Maybe they, you know, something as simple as, well, I don't know what is going on in their life, so maybe I could be a little more compassionate. Something that I feel like I'm late to the game on, but then at the same time, very proud that I'm starting to recognize these reactions that I have to these things to try to just be more, I don't know if it's maturity or mm-hmm. wiser. I don't really know what it is, but I do like that I'm going through what I would think is a more peaceful positive change. You know, I think we do live in a time that if you're willing to open your eyes, you can start to see what the world is, and you can start to learn, as I maybe should have earlier, but to do it at all feels great. The fact that everyone's life is so wildly different than yours, because you can only see through your own lens. I'm one of those people that for so long has been like, yeah, but we've all had these opportunities. And to come to a place of going, oh, that's not true. And there's this pride in me of going, well, I'm happy I've finally opened my ears and finally opened my eyes and finally opened my mind to understand how the world works, to then feel like maybe you can do something about it or offer something towards it. And I mean that on a societal level, and I mean it just on someone you get into an argument with on the road. To just go, ah, maybe that person is no different than me in their moment of road rage kind of thing.
No, they are very different. I'm a better person. I'm a better person than anyone who's fucking around on the streets of Los Angeles. Yeah.
It's so funny because, you know, we were in New York and didn't drive before we moved here. Right. I mean, certainly, I don't still. But Andy, I saw a darkness in him that I had never seen.
Yeah.
And when he started driving, and at one point I was like, I need you to stop because it's like stressing me out.
Yeah. I feel it. I already know exactly what you're talking about. I had no idea.
Well, so you said you met your wife in 2005.
Yeah.
How did you guys meet?
So we were both doing improv at Washington Improv Theater. She was in a group and I was in a group, and I liked her group a lot more than mine. They were a smaller group. They were doing long form. They were more social after. They had a better theater space. So I would go watch their shows. I went to watch their shows just because I wanted to see them. And then that's where I saw her in the group. And I was friends with some people in the group. So I would start going out to the bar with them after the shows because I loved that they had a social element to their improv team as opposed to what mine had, which wasn't like that at all. And just in the course of doing that, I started to develop this crush, and I thought she was dating one of the guys in her group. And then randomly I brought that up to one of the guys in the group, and they was like, oh no, they're just friends. She's not dating anybody. And I was like, here we go. Time to pounce.
Oh God. And then you know, she doesn't do comedy anymore. And then you went ahead and did it.
She was
poor lady.
I'm not gonna lie. I do feel for all of the boyfriends, the girlfriends, the spouses, the anybody who is emotionally and romantically involved with a comedian. God bless your soul. Truly, God bless. You have a level of patience that I will never, ever slightly dip my toe into. I don't even know what that is. But yeah, she was a stage, did like stage acting, and she's an actor. And I was doing improv, mainly doing stand-up. She was doing improv, mainly acting. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to New York after that, and she was doing a lot of stage production. She was with the Bushwick all-female Shakespeare group. They did a bunch of shows that were great. And then we moved to L.A. The theater thing's just harder to get into, but she's done some acting and commercials and some shows and stuff.
Yeah. But still, though, she out here, she holding it down, okay?
She's holding it down.
She is why your daughter knows how to read. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's what we have to,
That's exactly right. That is the truth. All of that is true.
It is funny. That's Naomi and I met at UCB doing improv.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
And then quickly stopped doing improv, right? Like, you kept at it a couple more years, but basically...
Look, I can yes and with the best of them. I'm just saying.
Ew. Ew.
Look.
What, you don't find that attractive? That boast?
Oh, you don't find my arrogance attractive? Oh, you don't find my...
Improv arrogance.
Yeah, you don't find my... You don't find my...
Yeah, improv, yeah. I do long form.
Look, I can do third beats like nobody else.
Yeah.
Sick. Okay, I think we have to take a break because we're going off the rails and getting into it.
No, please.
We're getting into a dark place.
No.
We have to clear their ears.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to answer your advice questions. We'll be back after this.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Dear listeners, Andy here doing the ad read again, and today we're talking about MeUndies. As the male half of couples therapy, I was asked to do this one because we're talking about boxers, which, and I hope I'm not breaking any confidences, Naomi does not wear. Now, if you're a podcast listener like me, you've heard plenty of ads for MeUndies, and frankly, I had always thought, it's underwear. How special can it be? And then I tried them, and friends, it is like wearing magic. It is like wearing a dream. It is so soft, there is nothing earthly I can compare it to. I am embarrassed, absolutely embarrassed to say I'm middle-aged and just finding this out, but the material your underwear is made out of really does make a difference. I won't say where I usually get my boxers from, but for comparison, MeUndies are like wearing a cloud covered in angel's feathers, and the other ones I wear are like wearing a bear trap smothered in puke. MeUndies got style for everyone, from all black classics to fun expressive prints in sizes extra small to 4XL. And they use sustainably sourced materials and work with partners that actually care for their workers. Also, I gotta point this out, there is a particular technology that the folks at MeUndies would like me to discuss. Now, you know Naomi is sex negative and I am sex neutral, so I didn't want to have to say what this technology is, so I asked friend of the show, friend in real life, Mort Burke, to say the phrase. So, okay, here it goes. For any listeners with penises and testicles, I can say medical words, you might be interested in MeUndies' sophisticated
contoured pouch and ball caddy.
What's that again, Mort? They're incredibly comfortable?
Contoured pouch and ball caddy.
Wonderful. Thanks, buddy. Okay, soft underwear comes in all packages at MeUndies. So to get 20% off your first order plus free shipping, go to MeUndies.com/therapy. That's MeUndies.com/therapy for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in.
Can we take a minute and talk about Skims? Now, you know I'm a recent Skims convert, having tried their underwear in the last few months, and I am now living lifted, supported, changed. So I decided to keep trying new stuff. And let me tell you, Skims basics and foundations are where it's at. Yes, I recently got the Soft Smoothing Seamless t-shirt. And y'all, it is so comfortable. It's been the perfect layer for me. I'm rocking it under a cardigan or a sweater when I want to keep it fitted and fabulous and not look all bulky. I mean, y'all know I'm back to work. Hashtag blessings. And I'm definitely that girl who is always cold in the office, okay? I need my layers, but I'm still trying to look put together. And the Soft Smoothing Seamless shirt is helping me get it right. And I also got the boyfriend t-shirt in Heather Gray, and it is so friggin' soft and comfortable, and it's giving casual but intentional when I wear it with a pair of jeans. I'm feeling very good in it. So if you want to give these and other basics a try, shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com. Now available in sizes extra, extra small through 4X. Thank you for the range, Skims. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows. Again, that's skims.com. Go check out everything they've got and the new t-shirt shop. Honey, with Rory Scovel here to help you handle your scandal. Now, yeah. Rory, these yeah. people, our dear listeners, our dear friends, they come to us. All right? I mean, well, you know, you have a podcast called Pen Pals. People reach out to you.
That's right.
You know, and you and DVK are out here trying to help them out.
Yeah.
We, our listeners are sensitive. Our listeners are gentle indoor kids. That's what I like to think.
Yeah.
And they send us DMs, Instagram, Twitter, Gmail. They also give us a ring. They give us a ring, okay? And you guys, I love when you call. The number is 323-524-7839 because it lets me hear where you're at emotionally.
I've got a mix of ones here today, and we're going to start with a voicemail. Here we go.
Oh, nice.
Hi, Andy and Naomi. My name's Mara. I'm a bit boy. I'm just realizing that after listening to many of your episodes. This is the first time I've said it out loud. I'm a bit boy, and I don't even know what my question really is, other than, am I stuck this way forever? Will I ever have meaningful relationships? I'm only 26. Tell me I can grow out of this. And do you have any specific tips on how to just, I don't even know, have a real conversation. I don't even know how to ask this question because I am really fighting the urge to do a bit.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Thanks, guys.
Oh my God. That's, I didn't even realize that was the first question when I mentioned you being a bit boy. So I was like, what? I did not realize that.
And also that she and I are both 26 is kind of
exactly.
a cool, kind of super cool. Yeah. I could get, I mean, I don't know how you guys open it up. I mean, I have
well,
thoughts.
We love, please, hey, please. Your guests, you got any hot tips?
I here's my hot tip. I do think, first off, I don't think you can ever not be a bit boy. And I think that's more of a positive than a negative, because I think doing bits is the greatest thing in the world. And it's so fun. And it's almost like you have a free drug built into your brain to help make you happy. But there, with that comes an awareness of that everyone is not a bit boy. And that's important.
For sure.
That's an important thing. So I think when you said, can I ever have meaningful conversations? I think there is a solution. And it's a tough one that you have to work on. I'm in the middle of working on it for sure. But it's just listening, and it's not wanting to say what you're thinking. It's truly listening so that you can react to what someone is telling you, and then you will find that you have a meaningful relationships. Side note, I think a lot of bit boys, a common thing is probably ADHD. I'm willing to bet that's a common thread amongst many, yeah, many people labeled as bit boys.
Totally. I mean, I feel like you were also, it took us a while, like early on, because Andy would have a joke or something in his head and he has to get it out. Like, yes, it has to be said, right? Yes. And it'll just be times where it's like, no. I'll just be like, I don't want to support it right now. Like, I'll just be really like, stop, you know? Yeah. And it was like, and we had to literally work on, like, and then for a long time, you know what he would do? And you, I guess you don't do it as much anymore. He would have his notebook with him and he would write stuff down because he'd be like, okay, I can't interrupt the conversation.
What I do now is I have a draft Gmail on my phone.
Uh-huh. You have a draft Gmail already.
That I write the stuff in. Yeah. Because, well, this is the difference, I think, for me, was that, like, my brain, and I don't think I have ADHD, but my brain would get entrained on a thing. Like, someone would say something and my brain would, like, flip the letters around, and then I would just keep playing with the letters and the person's name over and over until, like, I figured out the anagram or whatever, and I'm like, oh, that's fun, and then I missed most of the conversation and I'm just, or just like a pun or something,
you'll
or
like A to D, like someone will say something that makes you think of this other thing,
yes,
and then you're connecting, like, this dots thing,
yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I, so that's,
yeah, sorry, I think that on, connecting Murray the dots, I think it's that's a part of it, like, you can't not connect the dots. I'm willing to I think, you know, talking specifically about you, but Naomi, I bet you also, someone says something, you quickly connect the dots, but your superpower is probably like, yeah, but I can also pay attention and
I
listen,
keep it to myself.
Yeah,
uh-huh,
I can set that in a draft folder in my mind. Whereas I could never in a million years. Actually, the only time I've ever been able to use a draft folder in my mind is on mushrooms when I thought of bits. Afterwards, I was able to go right back and work on those five ideas and remember exactly what they were. But sober or, you know, high, smoking a joint, zero chance of that ever happening.
Okay, so what if one of the pieces of advice are try microdosing shrooms?
Yes.
Okay, that's a good tip.
I don't know. I've never done any psychedelics. I don't know, but maybe that would work. But
I think that's a good tip.
So, okay. So you could externalize the stuff. So you're talking in the conversation, but even to go write something down, or even to, like, if you, like, pull out your phone in the middle of a conversation is rude. Well, maybe not.
It can
maybe
be, that's depending just my, on who you're
maybe
right,
that's just
talking
my
to
generation. We are boomers. But the other thing is exactly what you said, is listening. It's like, you're just like, you have to, like, work on, and this is a thing I do in therapy all the time. It's about in the moment. So you have to, like, recognize there's, like, it's a two-step process. You recognize a thing is happening in the moment. Like, you're about to, like, someone says something and it, like, pings something in your brain and you're just, like, going to make a word salad out of it because that's, because you're bored. Also, like, I think some bit, like, doing bits is because you're bored. Like, someone's having a conversation and they're like, oh, there's a lot of smog out there today. And you're like, I don't give a fuck. I can see that there's smog out there today. Yeah, I don't need you to vocalize this to me.
Right.
So, like, let's, you know, if you're not going to say anything more interesting, like, fucking keep it walking, pal.
Yeah. Let's keep it moving. Keep it walking. Keep it walking.
Keep it walking. And it's in those moments to, like, suppress, like, recognize that you're about to, like, do a bit or do something, suppress that feeling, and then be like, oh, yeah, I hope the air quality, like, be present, because it's all about being present. I think part of it, like, if you're, if you're doing a bit and you're doing a bit with other people, like my friend Josh and I, it's like, we can have a normal, now that we're adults, we can have normal conversations, but a lot of our relationship is based on bits.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Going back to, like, childhood.
I can't be around them when they're together.
Yeah.
Okay, there was one, I'm going to tell it, I'm sure that the listeners have heard this, but there was one day we're at Andy's parents' house. And, you know, this is probably about 5 years ago, whatever, you know, we're all grown. Yeah. And Andy's parents had just gotten an Alexa. And we all sit there. And then Andy and Josh proceed to spend hours just asking Alexa to play different songs.
Yeah.
Just to see what Alexa knew. And, like, 20 minutes in, and I never thought I would be this way. I felt like I was wife in a sitcom. Because I was like, I'm going to bed.
She was lotioning her arms.
I was like, I have to lotion my hands and go to bed. Yeah. Because I was like, and, like, it kept being funny to them. Like, they were literally just, like, dying. And it was like, oh, remember this song from 1991? So they were, like, having this memory lane moment. I was just like, how is this still funny? I have to go.
It was. I can't explain it.
But that was your, but that's your love language together. But what did you do to get on the other side? Because it wasn't.
It's noticing in the moment, suppressing, and specifically being in the moment, being present. And if you do that enough, if you practice that enough, you will be present with people as opposed to like if someone says something and you're just like, oh, I got to think of a joke for this. You're like, no. And then honestly, if you're in the moment, you're going to be a funny, like if you do want to do bits with someone or you want to be or you're a funny person, you will be funny anyway. Because you're in the moment with them, as opposed to like thinking about like, oh, what's the punchline for this thing?
Which
it'll always be shittier than whatever you whatever you do naturally in the moment, however you react naturally.
I will say if you, you know, Mara, I think, was her name Mara?
Yeah.
I think if you are, I don't know if you're a comedian or not, but let's say that you are. Let's say this is specifically for comedians, but I think other people could use this as well. I think sometimes people forget that comedians, it is also art, and we are also artists. And so in the moment, if someone has said something that triggers something for you to write it down, I think that for me, it's, hey, I'm not trying to be rude. I have to write this down really quick because this is also how I make money. But also, and I think, and this is not bullshit, but also this is how I actually make people feel better. It is truly is, you know, someone sees you do 10 minutes and that, you know, let's say you just crush. That gives people something that we don't actually understand. We know we're giving it to them and we know we've had it, but we don't ever really truly get it from ourselves other than a great ego boost. And we're like, fuck, I am great. And that also does feel good. But to step away and go, hey, I just have to jot this down real quick. There's a couple things that I think are, that should be passable about that. And the fact that you go, this is how I buy groceries, slash, this is how some people feel better about their day. And I just got to write this down. And I think doing that kind of, you know, if you're doing it all the time, then someone's like, hey, dude, quit coming out and go to the fucking library or wherever you got to go. Go sit and write your goddamn hour. But, you know, but when something pops up, you know, I do that. I'll say, hey, I just got to put this in my phone real quick. And I think that's important. But I will say for bit boys out there, to all of them in the world, the learning how to settle down and really listen to people, you will feel better about those conversations and feel like they were more meaningful because I guarantee all of the bit boys, not all of them, but a lot of them have said to themselves more than the meanest bully in the world, Jesus Christ, get over yourself. I have said that to myself more times than the meanest person has ever said the meanest thing to me. You know, I'm constantly going, oh, I didn't pay attention to what my wife just said. I wonder if I can ever set myself aside to maybe fucking pay attention. And then I'm mad at myself. I think when I do that and I actively do it, I actually feel better. I'm like, I had a more meaningful conversation. I've spent enough time with me.
Right.
I've
right.
talked to me enough.
I also think off of what you guys are saying, it's like really listening, but then also, this is very silly, so you don't have to do what I'm saying, but a version of it. Like, replace every other bit with a question.
That's great. No, that's a great, that's great. That was what I was going to say next, was like, if you are bored in a conversation where someone's like, oh, the smog's real thick today, come up with your own meaningful things to ask people.
Yeah,
asking people lots of questions as opposed to like sitting there and is like coming up with jokes is a good way to be present.
Yeah. Yes, I think. Aren't you always jealous of people who are great at just engaging with like strangers? I'm always just like, how do you fucking do that? And they might be like, you get on stage in front of however many people, and I'm like, yeah, it's not the same. I'm expected to like engage, and I control the entire engagement.
But someone
in public, like for instance, someone says, man, it's really smoggy today. I'm in that same space of like, well, I can small talk as well. I also hate the uncomfortable space. Not that I necessarily want to, but I've had friends who in that moment would go, oh, what is it about the smog that, like, you know, where did you grow up? And I'm like, God, that's so much. You're a better, way better journalist than I am. I would have just been like, yeah, it's like crazy bad, right?
But I think that's okay. Some of your friends are probing too deeply, okay? I'm going to tell them right now. That's a stranger.
They're a little too aggressive.
You need to keep it pushing. You need to keep it pushing.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that with a stranger, but definitely walking. At a party, I would push. I do push deeper at a party now.
Yeah.
And that was a thing. I said this on the show before, I think, so I won't belabor it too much. But like in the back at UCB, in the back corner where all the performers would stand, people would just be like asking like dumb shit, like, what are you working on? And this is like before any of us had any kind of careers whatsoever. So it's just like, who gives a shit? Like, I don't give a shit about asking that question now that people have careers. I certainly didn't give a shit back in like 2012. Yeah. And I got so annoyed at that question. I started asking people deeper things. And so, like, they would ask that, and I'd be like, oh, I don't know. How are you feeling? Like, I would be like, well, what's going on in your... Oh, that was the question. What's going on in your heart? I would go, like, right to that thing right now. And I found that, like, I had deeper, more interesting conversations by pushing. And that maybe that's a dumb question, but, like, something along those lines.
But then also, though, what I like about it, because it can be... It also... The person's reaction, if someone's like, huh? Mm-hmm. You know who they are right away. And it's like, you, okay, you boring, bye. Like me, there's nothing I love more than being at a party and getting a life story. We were like Kevin Avery, comedian Kevin Avery. He had like a holiday party a few years ago. And we were talking to some woman, and we just had her. She was like, I'm divorcing my husband, but we are living together in the same place until this happens. Like, we got into, honey, I didn't leave her side.
Of course,
let's get a drink, got comfortable on the couch. I said, tell it to me, sis. That's like what I like. I like getting you all the info.
Yeah.
And so way more than just like, so what are you working on? Like, it was one of my favorite. Karen Kilgariff has this song, and it, one of the lyrics is like, if one more person asks me what I've been working on lately, I don't think I'll ever stop crying. And I was like, yes, that's it. Right. People just ask you what you're doing, and it's just like, why? Why? Yeah. Let's talk about our heart, especially after COVID. I think this is another thing too, Mara.
Yeah.
I think now you can really start fresh, because I think we're all kind of, we've all been, first of all, we're all trauma bonded. We've all struggled. And I think we're also, I think people are a little more open to the real and friendships and connection after the 2 years we've had. So I think you can do it.
I think that's true. Yeah, I agree with that as well. Yeah, I think all that stuff. I mean, I told someone the other day, like, my perfect night is like around a fire and everyone's got their cocktail of choice, like an old fashioned, and you've got a joint that's just yours, and someone just kicks it off by going, what do you think happens when you die? And I would be like, here we go. We're in it now.
Oh, God. That sounds like my mind at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
What do you think happens when you die?
Oh, God. All right.
What's this next one, Andy?
Well, this was... I've been saving this one for someone with children, so...
Okay.
It's actually pretty serious, so...
Uh-oh. Okay, Rory, we got to pivot.
Out there. Okay. Good. But I also have, like, a very short, non-serious one.
After.
Yes.
So, you're going to sandwich it. Yeah.
As the closer.
Good.
So this comes to us anonymous from an Instagram direct message. Hi, Naomi and Andy. I know you prefer voicemails, but I have wee ones around, and I'm not 100% convinced I won't start crying, so here we go. My partner and I recently moved into a new neighborhood with our kiddos, and it has been so idyllic. There are several families on the street with kids, our kids' ages, so the street has been a constant bike riding, rollerblading, Pokemon trading party for the past 2 months.
We love it.
In addition to the lovely kids, we absolutely adore the parents, a rare treat, because I've had multiple experiences of the kids getting along, but the parents not, and vice versa. There is one mom who has an absolute heart of gold. She feels like a soul friend, one that clicked instantly, and the friendship feels effortless. She and her partner recently married, both a second marriage for them, and they also share custody of their kids from their previous marriages, so it's a fun flow of truly adorable, wonderful kiddos in their house.
Okay, this is sounding good so far.
So good.
Our kids get along perfectly, and our husbands even were starting to hang out regularly. It felt wonderful and perfect, especially with the past year of isolation and how difficult it can be to make adult friends.
I'm so scared of the drop
that's
coming.
I know.
You're just lifting it so high, the further we're going to fall.
I know.
Yeah, here's where we grit our teeth. Fast forward to a few nights ago, we were hanging out at her house and I observed her partner was being uncharacteristically disparaging. She had mentioned she previously has had to leave the house because, quote, he gets mean and I don't have to put up with it, unquote. I wondered if he was displaying what he was talking about. My husband called him out on it and he played it off like he was just being funny. Spoiler alert, he wasn't funny. I left with the kiddos because I was exhausted and my husband stayed behind. They're just a couple houses down and I'm an old soul with an early bedtime. Bless. So him staying behind wasn't uncommon. My husband was alone with her as her husband had gone inside. Suddenly, though, her husband came out and screamed at her to get inside. It was such a sudden shift in the tone of the evening that she and my partner kind of froze.
Oh, my gosh.
Her husband then grabbed her and started shoving her in the house, screaming at her that she is to go in when he does.
Oh, my God.
My husband started to intervene, and when her husband got in my husband's face and screamed at him to leave. My husband did, calling me immediately. He got home very quickly and told me what happened. I called my friend. She didn't answer. I texted. She has her phone glued to her always, but no answer. We went back to the house, and we could hear him screaming at her. She was also screaming, but it wasn't words. It was in terror, and she was sobbing. My profession is in mental health, and I've worked previously in domestic violence. Fortunately, their kids were all gone for the weekend, but I was terrified he was hurting her. I genuinely felt I had no option but to call the police. My partner and I stayed up most of the night terrified, both of what was happening to her and that he might retaliate. The next day, it was textbook cycle of violence. Her arm was covered in bruises where he grabbed her, but she was going on and on about how he was the best, and he was suddenly doing all the house projects he had refused to do for the weeks prior.
He also reached out to my husband and apologized and invited my husband to do all kinds of outings with him. My friend talked to me about how, quote, some nosy neighbor had called the police and minimized the fight entirely. She doesn't know I heard her screams, and if I'm honest, I keep hearing her screams. So my question, what do we do? They live down the street. I am genuinely concerned for her. I know people don't leave until they're ready, and I know there's nothing I can do to force it. I want to be a safe support for her if that time comes. At the same time, I'm not comfortable with my kids being around him. I'm also terrified of him finding out I'm uncomfortable with my kids being around him.
Yeah.
My husband is not interested in continuing a friendship with him and is attempting a superficial neighbor relationship. But she is already talking to me about doing a Friendsgiving together and wants our family to plan a trip together. How do we navigate this where I can be support for her and also keep our family safe? Sorry for the novel. Truly, just hearing Naomi tell me it's going to be okay would be everything right now. Thank you for the pod. I'm such a busy human, but I always have time for your podcast every week. Sister girl. Sister girl. Man. My sister girl angel. You're hurting, okay? And you have good instincts, both as just like a person and a mental health professional. It is going to be okay. Okay for your family, certainly, certainly. The okay for their family may take longer. I mean, it's hard when somebody lives so close. You know, if they were even just a drive away, you can be like, I'm busy, I'm busy.
Right.
And just kind of keep that separate. But then be like, but always, because here's what I would also say too. One of the things, because I forgot when we were talking about, oh yeah, remember we recently did an episode where the person was talking about how their mother, they felt like their father was being abusive towards their mother, like just disparaging her, and was like, what do I do? And it was, and like, we were talking about how like necessarily at 70 years old, you wouldn't leave your partner. But what you can do is like, for instance, you call up your homegirl and you ask her if she want to go to coffee with you. You ask her if she want to go to dinner with you. You'd be like, let's do some around the block walking.
Yeah,
I would do any to be what you're saying, which is a support for her.
Like leave the husbands out.
Yes, if you purposely leave the husbands out and even the kids. Honestly,
if you purposely leave your husband out, then it might be like just us girls and the kids. It's,
yeah, that's what
and
I mean.
The kiddos.
I even the kiddos. It can just be tricky. Like I'm not saying you keep them away, fucking Montague and Capulet style, but I just feel like you know if what you need to do is disentangle.
Yeah,
I think the kids are further entangling.
Yeah.
Because they'll be like, I want to go to my friend's house. And then the question, well, is the father there? Like, that just starts the whole thing.
It's tough for, I mean, if I'm in that position, I'm definitely not sending my kids up the. I'm not. I wouldn't be like, yeah, totally go inside and play. I would be like, no, we don't go up there anymore. And at best, we're outside all the time.
Yeah.
And one of us has to be there. But it sucks. Which I know is such a like it's so much more than that. But the thing about it is that negative vibe, that negative energy doesn't change. It you almost have to figure out how it can be eliminated. You live in this neighborhood, you go, everything's great, but here's this awful element to it that changes the dynamic of everything. All the bliss is now gone. I agree with you. I think the only thing you can do, and you know, this person works in mental health. I'm sure they know this stuff. My assumption is like kind of what you're saying is like one step at a time, which is go have a conversation, fully aware that this person is in denial of how bad the situation is. This person is in denial of the abuse in many ways. I mean, if like, oh, he's great. No, he's great. You know, that sort of denial, you almost have to figure out a way to open their eyes to that, because you know our brains try to protect us so much that person's like, oh, I don't want you to be right, because if my brain can tell me that you're not right, then things are fine. And then that's why every abusive moment is such a surprise and a shock and a terror, because you've almost forgotten, oh yeah, that's right, he's a lunatic. He's a maniac.
It's her second marriage, and I wonder if it's just like, I have to make this work. If there's that
people
kind
feel
of...
that way, people feel that way, but I think it's never too late. Like, this is why, and again, easier said than done. But I know for me, as somebody who grew up, you know, with a single mom, and you know, I came out fab, you know, so like she's doing stuff, you know, she was great. But I also felt like I learned. For me, it's like so important to have my own money. Like, Andy and I do not have a joint account. Like, we share expenses and stuff, but there's a part of me inside that just feels like I got to be able to go if I need to go. And he ain't doing nothing to me, okay? Like, it's literally just that.
Yeah, please be clear. Please be clear.
Nothing is happening, but it is very important for me to never feel like I am dependent on him. Yeah. I'm also really serious about I like to have separate friends. Because I never want to feel like, you know, because you can feel like you lose everything when you lose one single person.
Yeah.
And so it's always been the kind of person to me where I've always been the kind of person where it's like, you got to have your own thing, even when you're deep in love. And so, you know, but also I was going to say too, you know, does your friend, because you said y'all had a soul connection. This is a soul sister. Yeah. So she also must know what you do for a living, right? So I think that she knows who you are and like that she can talk to you and come to you, because that was already your vibe if y'all were soul connecting anyway. I just think it's about, you know, as you know, getting her out of the house as much as she can be out and letting her know she can talk to somebody, especially too if you really set it up where it's like you guys are just friends and it's like fuck the husbands, no double dates, no whatever. Then she'll also probably be more likely to be honest, because I think what can happen is you don't want to talk to somebody about your spouse if you feel like, oh, well, I don't want to ruin their relationship, like their friendship or something, because you don't want to like sell your spouse out, I guess. And I think also when it comes to like the family get-togethers and whatnot, can you just kind of blame it on the kids in that like you're like, oh, we can't do a group thing, like the kids are too needy, or like, you know, it ends up being chaotic.
Blame COVID. You have a built-in excuse with the pandemic for anything at this point.
Not anymore, depending on, like, the ages of it. Like, if everyone's vaxxed and, like...
Just say, no, you say, I'm worried about... Sorry, we can't get together. I'm worried about the virus.
I guess you could do that. I just think it's got to be long-term.
I think it's got to be long-term, too. And I wonder if, and I have no idea, but I wonder if you gain more ground if you just say, hey, look... I am aware that your husband is abusive, and for that reason, socially, things will be different with us. I can't have my kids in the house. It's not you. I care deeply about you. I want to help you, and I'm here to help you in any way whatsoever. But the reality, I mean, like I said, I have no clue what you gain from this, but just being like point blank, things are different now. I now know that you're in an abusive relationship and you don't have to be, and I can help you. There's a chance that friend goes, fuck off. You know, but right. I think I don't know this from experience, but I could imagine that there's embarrassment too. People want to be the family that's identified as,
yes,
oh yeah, we have an abusive relationship, right, and now that's how we're labeled, and that's who we are, and that's what you guys think. And that, I think that's why some people do the cover up of like, no, he's great. He had a little too much to drink. And I think you, because of embarrassment, you go down that road so far, you convince yourself that he is a good guy. And no, he just had a little too much to drink. And you stop seeing, no, he has true, legit mental, psychological issues that he has to deal with. And he'll never get to dealing with them until he sees how damaging it really is. I mean,
right,
that, I know it's so bizarre. I think about this all the time, but people that are in the abusers, and I'm not trying to make some sort of excuse, but there's a world where those abusers were also at one point abused. That's what turns them into thinking this is some solution. This is some sort of common interaction. Is that, well, yeah, if I tell my wife I'm going to bed, she needs to come inside. You're like, well, you probably didn't concoct that. You actually probably do think that because as a kid, you witnessed that. Mm-hmm. And so you think this is normal. That's why he doesn't stop. It's more than just, you know, a mental thing. It's actually someone who thinks, well, no, this is reality. This is how things are.
Right.
So it's, I think the point blank, here's the facts, here's the truth, here's the situation. And I think there's also a world where you label it like your husband needs help. Also, you need help.
I think it would be the word. I think it would be the wording of it, because I think that, like, yeah, as you're saying, because I get what you're saying, because you're basically saying, like, if you try to be honest with her, maybe you can strip away some of that artifice that makes, yeah, her feel like she can't be honest about what she's going through.
Yeah.
But I think also at the same time, you don't want that label, and it's hard to look at somebody, yeah, when you're like, they think I'm weak, a doormat, abused, yeah, blah blah blah. So I don't, yeah, and she wants to keep that door open. So I think if, you know, if anything, it's like, you know, your husband really freaked us out, and yeah, I would prefer to just hang with you if possible. Like, you know, just kind of do that, right? Don't go deep. Don't, like, don't start to sort of diagnose him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just sort of just do that, and then, like, you know, again, it's just about keeping the door open to your friendship. And then also, you know, trust your instincts. Trust your instincts.
It's threading a needle for sure.
Yeah.
It's like you said, it's the word choice. It's the how, the when, and the way. All of it is, like, it's delicate. But the only reason I say, if you go into it saying, hey, we can't hang out for false reasons, those might start to pile up, because I've gone, yeah, down that road, and then someone goes, you know, you go, well, we can't because of COVID, and they go, oh no, we have all these rapid tests, and you're like, well, also my cousin is in town, and then they go, oh, they're invited too, and you're like, all right, look, if I just tell you the truth, then I don't have to.
My cousin hates rapid tests.
My cousin only PCRs, which is so snobby. So snobby of him.
Oh, well, we'll hire a concierge.
Oh, no. Well, we're out of gas. Well, we walk. You can walk to our house. Okay. I think,
oh,
there's
my
slippery
foot. Heel spurs.
A slippery slope with the...
Oh, my gosh.
It's true. Yeah.
Rory, has there ever been another parent, not doesn't have to be this level, but someone who's kind of like a shit heel that you just don't want your kid around? How have you, like, dealt with that?
You know, that is very real, that the kids can hit it off and the adults don't hit it off. I think it's, there is a way to sort of, you know, when your kid really hits it off with somebody, especially my kid, she's an only child. So it means a lot to us to do these play dates and get her with, mm-hmm, other kids and playing all the time. It's so important. But you do have to sort of navigate when, you know, someone is, luckily we've never found ourselves in a position where I thought someone was abusive or, you know, whatever, but, you know, I could see myself in a situation where, let's say, instead of abuse, someone can't stop talking about, you know, how the government is out to get you, and you're like, oh, okay, like, let's say conspiracy theory. So yeah, not, yeah, someone who would ever, like, you know, hit their family or even with my kid, but still, you have to factor in, well, what do people talk about and how do they talk to each other? If that's going to influence my child, I don't want them growing up in a world where they think people don't talk like that. They need to know there's all kinds of communication out there. But I think there's a way of just going, hey, what about a play date with this other friend? You sort of steer and navigate. Now, granted, if they live up the street from you, it's a little more difficult. Luckily, it sounds like there's a lot of kids in that neighborhood and they all play. So there's a good blend of, all right, it's not always just, we're not relying on just this relationship up the street, but it's a slippery slope with other parents. And I think, you know, where your kids meet is also where you're going to find a sort of more like-minded, potentially more like-minded sort of mental, I don't know, state. You know, if we were to suddenly start going to church, we might be like, huh, no one here really clicks with us. It's like, well, yeah, because you're at church and you're not a church person.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we go to some sort of class, like an art class, you know, not that that's some sort of safe, like, oh, it'll be safe. You still might run into someone wildly different, but there is a chance that maybe someone's like, oh, yeah, yeah, no, I think logically also, and I think, you know, hitting your kids is a horrible thing and that communication is important. You go, great, we're already off to a great start. You know,
is there anybody, like, do you have any parent friends where it's like, your wife is like the one where you're like, I can't take them. Will you go drop her off? Do you know what I mean? Like certain parents.
And name
that are like,
them.
Name them. Actually, yes. Give and us name names.
You know, we're pretty lucky. We don't have that. I think we've gotten lucky that most of my daughter's friends and friendships that we have, it's been great. Yeah. But also you have to remember you don't necessarily converse with these parents so much. I mean, if it's at a birthday party, sure. But the other thing that is so, I forget this all the time, but like going to a kid's birthday party, I don't ever remember until I'm at the party, like, oh yeah, all of these parents, we're all the same age. I'm not talking to like an adult. I don't ever see myself as an adult. even at 41, this is where the bit boy has controlled my own perception of my identity. But I just see myself as like, oh yeah, I'm just like, I'm not irresponsible, but I also, you know, if you want to talk about the stock market, I can sit here and nod my head and pretend I know what I'm talking about. But at the same time, I'm probably going to talk about how I don't know what you're talking about and think that that's somehow amusing. Yeah. But you do realize like, oh yeah, you're also late 30s or early 30s or late 40s or whatever. And you're like, oh yeah, we're all in this same sort of space. So that for the most part, you run into people who are kind of talking about the same stuff anyways or within a space in terms of just like how to operate as a human being. You know, I'm not at a thing where we're never in a position where someone's like, I don't know, I kind of support January 6th. You're like, you know what I mean? Then you're like, wait, what are we at? Whose birthday is this? How did we meet them? How did our daughter meet this friend? You know, you just, those things just sort of don't happen, really.
Right.
For us.
Do you have time for one quick one?
Yeah, yeah.
Here we go. This is a voicemail.
Hi, Naomi and Andy and guest. Thank you so much for having such an awesome show. It really brightens my day when I can hear it. I love it, and I love you. Okay, just a quick question. Settle a bet. So let's just say you're with somebody for a long while, and you decide that, you know, you need to get some work done. You're going to reconvene in about a half hour, and then maybe watch a show. So you get back reconvening, and the other person has already started a movie without you. What's the proper thing to do next? Do they turn the movie off? Do you start the show? Help me out. You can probably tell which person I am in that situation. But anyway, thanks so much for your advice.
Okay, so there was a betrayal here.
Leave them. Leave them.
There is a betrayal. There is a betrayal. Like, we said we were starting to show.
And that's worse than the abusive husband. That's worse than the
Rory! Oh, my goodness.
See, that's the bit. That's when you can't not do the bit. I agree. Betrayal is the perfect word.
But, like,
it's happened, right? The other day, you were watching Criminal Minds.
Yeah. We were gonna always. Sure, always.
We were gonna watch something, and then I And then I didn't want to interrupt you, though. We're going to eat dinner. I forget exactly.
No, when you came over, though, with your food, I was like, I stopped Criminal Minds.
But I didn't ask you to stop.
And pivoted to our program.
I didn't ask you to stop, did I?
I understand that, but I'm a very good partner.
I have two questions. What was the food, and what is the program that you guys pivot to?
Was it the night that I had
one of your kindergarten dinners?
Yeah, one of my kindergarten dinners. It might have been baked Lay's, corn nuggets, and like
broccoli.
Oh, roasted broccoli.
Love it.
And he was just that. Like, I'm ready. My nuggets are ready. And then yeah.
Big bowl of roasted broccoli.
And I think we pivoted to Reno 911. Because Andy had never seen Rory. So now he's watching it. Now we're watching it as a couple, and it's nice to see the world through his eyes.
I love just he sits down with that very childish meal, and you turn it off Criminal Minds because you're like, you're not ready for this.
Andy, put your hands capable. Over your eyes.
Yeah. You know. Until I pause it, do not listen to anything they're saying. This is above you. This is beyond you.
I would eat
that meal three times a day, just to be clear.
It's a good meal.
Yeah, I think I gotta say, unless it hasn't been discussed that you intend to watch something together, then you know, if you did say, look, we're gonna reconvene in 30 minutes, if in that scenario, I would be kind of like, I think I'd go into it with a very what the fuck attitude. I'd be like, what the fuck? Why did you start a thing? Now, granted, what is the movie they've started? And do I not give a shit about that movie? And then I just go, oh, okay. I thought you said you wanted to hang out, but we don't have to. But we did say we were going to hang out. It seems like you've decided to start a movie.
A motion picture.
That you've already started. Even if you wanted me to watch it with you, you've already started
exactly.
It. Without me, I can read these signs. I'm not mad. I just need you to know this is bizarre. Like, for instance, if you guys said, hey, let's watch Criminal Minds together, you're walking up with your food and she's like, I'm 15 minutes in, you would be like, well, then what does that mean? We go back and rewatch the 15 because that's what we said we were gonna do.
Yeah,
I'm very much on her side about this.
That's
crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's really wild.
Turn off the movie. That's right. Yeah. Right.
Yep. Turn off the movie. Absolutely. Why you would even start a motion picture is beyond me.
They didn't start the thing that they were supposed to watch together, right?
No, that's crazy. No, it's separate. They were gonna watch a show, and then this person, I guess, like was killing time, and thought the way to kill time was to start a whole ass movie.
There are millions of ways to kill time that aren't starting a two-hour thing.
Doodle in a sketchbook.
That's great.
Doodle in a sketchbook. That's going to be my new advice for everything.
Get a doodle book and get a nice marker. I tell you what, feels good.
You could dust. Dusting takes about a half an hour.
You could dust.
Dusting a floor of a house, I say.
Why did the person stop the movie at the point of reconvening?
That's the question. Because that way doesn't Naomi sound like changed, they did.
You know, the way you turned off Criminal Minds, you go, all right, you're over here. Let's do it.
Yeah.
That's different. Yeah.
It is.
Or you could, I think, Rory, you said this, but like, if it's something you like, are like, oh, I don't mind walking, like something you've seen a million times and you kind of their partner put Gymkhana on, and you're like, yes, I don't know. It's like an old Van Damme film.
It's like from the 80s, it's gymnastics and karate like mixed. Gymkhana.
Honestly, when we were talking about films, going back to the bit question from earlier, my brain started going through like, what's a funny film to say? And I thought, I had to genuinely push that into the back of my mind and
Lord.
Be like, please pay attention to what everyone's saying. It genuinely was a conscious thought, like, stop this, Andy.
But then it came up at a natural organic moment that was much more satisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could feel that organic moment.
Yeah. But like, you could, because like I was watching, you were out with a friend and I was watching Licorice Pizza and you came in and you were like, I'll see what this like weird movie
I just kind of walked by it, but it already started, so it's not like I was involved.
But you sat down and were watching. Like, if it's something you don't care about or like could be into and you don't care that you missed the first thing,
I sit and play Boggle.
I love that. Oof,
I just sit
that.
Next to him and play boggle. It's like, we're being close. I've got my boggle.
Here's my question. Do you guys, before you start Licorice Pizza, are you already fully aware that Naomi has mentioned she's maybe not that interested in ever seeing it or caring much about it?
Yeah, we totally, like, I went through the screeners we had, and I'm like, which ones do you not want to see at all?
Yeah, see, that's called sanity. That's called, that is literally going, what's the easiest thing I could ever do to maintain a healthy relationship? And it's like, yeah, just go ahead and check in on the stuff that, and go, oh, okay, so you don't like those movies? Then those are going to be my time moments. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes, if it's a Wes or a Paul Thomas, she's not into it.
No.
Yeah.
A Wes, a Paul Thomas. No, thank you.
But those a Paul Andersons. West. But the Anderson family. But a Paul West movie. Now that's.
Oh, no.
That's where you dig in.
I'm going to give another just piece of advice to all the Bit Boys out there. One thing I learned that I found very helpful. Someone said, you know, before you say something, and it's not in the context of bits. It's usually like how you stop saying something hurtful, you know?
Yeah.
It is, does it need to be said? Does it need to be said by me? And does it need to be said right now?
Yeah.
And that is how I feel about bits as well as hurtful words.
Yeah. And you got to ask yourself those three questions fast, because if the answer to all of them is yes, then you got to quickly get that bit out. You got to fire that. There's a timing to that bit. It's got to
go. Oh, no. Oh, my God.
Oh, the other, hey, to go back to the bit thing, sometimes you got to leave stuff on the table. Sometimes you got to like, you want to say it, but the time, because I learned this a while ago, where it's like, even if the time had passed, I would say the joke.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's just silence. And you're like, but I wanted to get this out. And I was polite. And it's like, and I waited for everyone to stop
to pivot
talking.
To a whole ass new topic.
Yeah, I waited for everyone to stop talking normally so I could say the joke. And then it's like, no. Part of this whole thing is timing.
Yeah.
So,
it's so sad.
Get it out.
I know. It's so a sad moment. It crushes me when that happens.
Oh my God.
If you can't get it out, leave it on the table.
Live it.
I agree. There's such a timing to doing the bit and
Oh, Rory, thank you so much for coming and visiting with us.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
This
I love
was so
it.
Wonderful. You're a true gem.
Yeah, this was a real delight.
A dang delight.
You guys are too nice. Thank you.
All right, you guys. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.